through the ashes, and they all came back at us with like the wind. And it was like, it was this moment, like the three of us just kind of like cracked up, like crying, laughing. It was the most cathartic, therapeutic, bonding thing that could have happened, as if she was there, like wanting us to like laugh together as a family and like be okay. And so I guess personally, my experience is laughter is the best medicine, and it's helped us bond, because we all know it hurts and we've cried and it sucks. We can live in that, or we can try to like laugh and like know that there is life to be led, and we do it for her and she'd want us to be happy and not stay in that darkness. So personally, I think comedy is essential.
Dying of laughter.
Not funny.
My mom has stage 4 cancer in her bones and in her breast. My dad's disease was 15 years, he died of ALS. I made a podcast about death, seemed like the thing to do. And if you're sad by all of this, well, you're gonna die too.
Happy week, all. Hope this finds you as well as possible and that you had an enjoyable-ish Thanksgiving if you celebrate here in America or wherever you are. I made the creamed corn. It was delicious. You know that recipe that has like tons of milk and cream and butter and sugar and just tastes better than anything else you've ever had? It was that. And my sister made these brie bites with puff pastry, brie, and fig jam. What? Anyways, that already feels like years ago at this point, even though it was last week. But my high low for this week, my low is just feeling the holiday sluggishness that comes with the pandemic. And it just feels like I'm missing that holly jolly pep in my step that I sometimes have. But that's okay. Just being honest, I am participating in the Modern Loss Holiday Gift Swap, which is a gift swap where you fill out a form saying who you lost and they pair you with someone else who has lost someone anywhere in the country. Then you get each other gifts, around $30 each. And I participated in the Fatherless Father's Day gift swap earlier this year and had a really good experience. So I'm looking forward to that. Just sharing a little holiday joy in that way. My high of this week, I went behind the scenes of a BuzzFeed project that I directed remotely, produced, and also edited, because as I've mentioned on here before, I taught myself to edit this year, so that's been crazy. And it was about women's vibrators. And this video sold so many vibrators. I can't even explain how shocked I was. I hate when people say they can't say certain things, but I don't know. I'm not really supposed to say how many, but I'll just say it's thousands and thousands and lots of vibrators. And they say that 90% of directing is casting. I totally agree with that, because I got to work with this great talent who I met earlier this year at BuzzFeed named Mae Elridge, and she just crushed it. And it was so cool to have her bring the vision to life that I had been thinking of. And her girlfriend tried different vibrators and reviewed them, and it was funny and fun. And I got to add music and edit it to have this whole comedic feel, and it was just really powerful. And it actually was BuzzFeed's number one video in sales. What does that even mean? Should I direct real commercials, guys? I don't know. Anyways, I'm excited about that. Anyways, poor Max, who's probably listening to this and being like, wait, where's my interview? I cannot wait for today's interview with Max Adler. You know him as Dave Karofsky on Glee. You remember the bully, the homophobic, slushy throwing guy who was this controversial, amazing figure that it couldn't be nicer in real life. I was like, Dave, is that you? My gosh. No slushies were thrown in the making of this interview. You also know him as the controversial, buzzed about character Tank in Switched at Birth. He's also worked with Woody Allen and Cafe Society, Clint Eastwood and Sully, and was recently a lead in the film Mope, which came out at Sundance 2019. Most recently, he was in Trial of the Chicago 7, which he also co-executive produced, which just came out on Netflix. I admittedly have not seen it yet. I cannot wait. It's a very powerful and important story, and the fact that Max is in it is just so fantastic and speaks to his talent. So this guy has done it all, and he's also heavily involved with GLAAD, the Trevor Project, and the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Today, we are opening up about the loss of Max's mother when Max was in high school. And while she ultimately died of a heart attack, Max's mother did combat Lyme disease as well as muscular dystrophy. So we will be discussing the complexities of that and what that meant for Max growing up. And he was 17 when his mom died. I was 19 when my dad died, and despite having completely different loss stories and experiences, it was really powerful getting to connect with Max in the sense that it was generally around the same time of both of our lives. Max is just so impressive. He's one of those guys that when you do get to talk to him, you're like, wow, I understand where your success stems from, because he's larger than life. He couldn't be kinder, throwing out compliments and kind words and wittyisms and jokes. And I just so appreciated getting to really dive deep into the complexities of his grief story as well as his career. Normally for these interviews, I do go into more depth about one or the other, not necessarily planning to, but it tends to lean one way or the other. With this one, we really explored both. So it was so hard to edit it down. I wanted to keep everything. I did keep most of it. It's about an hour 30, but it's really worth it. And I spent a lot of time just like futzing with the little audio to make it as great as possible, because I'm just so passionate about it. And as you guys know, my in-person interviews are always even higher audio quality, which of course this year has not occurred, but it is very high considering the Zoom situation. So huge thank you to Max for coming on, and shout out to our mutual friend, Rochelle Meese, who connected us. Rochelle is a hysterical comedian herself, and she wrote Bachelor the Musical, a parody on, yes, The Bachelor, and it's so, so good. I can't wait for live things to come back, so hopefully more people can see it, because she's just a powerhouse comedic talent. And they both went to Horizon High School, which ironically, my boyfriend also went to Horizon High School. My boyfriend's a few years behind them, so they didn't overlap, but there's just a lot of things overlapping here. Also, I interned for Glee casting folks, UDK, and Glee was Max's big break, so I just felt like there was all these overlapping little fun tidbits like that. Enough about me, enough about this intro, on to the episode. You'll love it. Max, I'm obsessed with you. Can't wait to run into you in person one day. Let's do this. So, Max, thank you for being here. You are so talented, and I'm really excited that our friend Rochelle connected us.
I'm thrilled. Rochelle Meese, amazing comedian, amazing gal, amazing person, amazing human, generous, hilarious, smart. I went to high school with her. We were in show choir together. We were in jazz choir. We toured around the nation, different cities, competing. It was real life Glee. And here we are, yeah, friends for half of our lives. And I'm here today because of her and you. So shout out to Rochelle, and shout out to her Bachelor musical.
So good.
Brilliant. And I actually do watch The Bachelor as a guilty pleasure. And so, yes. But you don't even have to like it to love the musical. It's just so smart and so witty and so brilliant. So anyone who gets a chance to see it, don't miss it.
For those that don't know, do you mind sharing a little bit about your upbringing and what brings you here today, talking about your mom? Who did you grow up with and where, and what was your childhood like before your fame and before your mom was no longer here?
Fame? Is there fame?
I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to throw some your way.
I did something right to get on this podcast.
You're a known entity. That counts.
I love it. I'll take it. I'm an entity. Mission accomplished. Let's go home. I was born in New York, Queens, New York, to my dad and mom, who were both teachers, living in a small little like 3-floor walk-up, one bedroom. And they wanted to just get me out of there because it's a hard place to raise a kid. And so they followed, their parents had retired in Arizona, where I get now more than ever why you'd want to go there, because it's beautiful. I had the best of both worlds, because there was this very East Coast Italian New York, you know, culture and accent. And so I was surrounded by that and that kind of upbringing. But in Arizona, which is, you know, a whole other world, and, you know, the West, and, you know, cowboys and different politics. And so I kind of had this really cool juxtaposition of cultures every day growing up. And then when I was 6, my little baby bro, Jake, was born, which was awesome. I've been asking for a little sibling, and I wanted one so bad. Did all the sports growing up, you know, baseball, soccer, football, basketball. And then, like, middle school, I was always into performing and acting. I did, like, Jesus Christ Superstar when I was, like, 10 in the community. Like, I was always, like, you know, dabbling, doing little summer camps for, like, singing actors and, you know, things like that, Guys and Dolls.
Oh, who are you in Guys and Dolls?
Who's the guy? I don't even know his name anymore. He was like 7th grade.
Nathan Detroit.
No. I wasn't Nathan or Sky.
Sky Masterson. Okay.
I know Sky Masterson. Nathan Detroit. I know. I was the guy, you know, in the beginning that's like, I got the horse right here. His name is Paul Revere. And he's a guy that says if the weather's that. And I did that actually with Rochelle. So there was
love.
Did, yeah, that's so crazy. Anyway, so enter high school. And I, just because I'm built like a football player, I assumed like you watch all the Freddie Prinze movies growing up. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to have like a Letterman jacket and like be an awesome high school football varsity badass. And then my dad was a soccer college badass in his day and busted up his knees, had like 5 knee surgeries, knee replacement, like the whole, you know, his dream was like shattered, became a teacher. A special ed teacher, which also was a big part of my upbringing, just watching him do that and, you know, work with those kids and those families and just have a whole understanding and empathy for a whole other, you know, lifestyle.
Amazing.
Yeah, it really was. And so he told me, he kind of sat down and was like, look, like, are you really going to be a football player? Like, are you really considering this? Because like, I happen to think you're a pretty good actor and, you know, mom was there and she agreed and was like, I think you should just pursue this. Like, you know, you actually could do something with it. I was like, okay, well, that sounds good to me. So I didn't really do sports after high school. And I just threw myself into like choir and drama, did everything, a drama club, student government, you know, show choir, jazz choir, classical choir, just big arts guy. And yeah, so that was high school. And then a couple things happened. It was like, Rochelle, my fellow Horizon Husky knows as well, but Garrett Hedlund, pretty big actor now, an unknown entity, you would say. Went to our high school and we were in choir together and like, you know, roomed together for like choir retreats. And he, very good looking guy, so I could never be that, but like, he just looks like he's, you know, like a movie star. And he would go back and forth. He would just miss school and be like, where's Garrett? Oh, he drove to LA. He's auditioning for something awesome. And I was like, whoa. Junior year, he booked Troy with Brad Pitt and Orlando Bloom. And all of a sudden, like, we were in school and he was in Malta, like, shooting, like, sword fighting scenes, like, on cliffs and, like, hanging out with these guys. And so I was like, the first time that I was like, oh my gosh, like, is this possible? Like, is this actually, like, a tangible dream? Like, he was just sitting right here and now he's in Hollywood. Because at that point, I didn't think it was really going to happen. I was just like, I was just going to go to school at ASU for broadcast journalism. And I was like, this is the second best. Like, I, you know, a script, I'm on TV, like I have wardrobe, but there's like hair and makeup. It's the same kind of thing. But when that happened, I was like, huh. And then my mom had said, like, you know, you don't need a degree to have a career in the arts. Because she was a dancer in her 20s, and then she had Hodgkin's and had to get surgery, and so then her dream, you know, ended as well. So both my parents had these dreams, you know, athlete, dancer, and then both became teachers. So that was also a big part of my upbringing of like, oh, well, you know, the dreams don't really happen. But when both of them kind of had my back, and she was the one that kind of said, why even go to college? Like, just get out there and like, go for it. And you could always go to college. And I was like, Mom, you're crazy. Like, you don't do that. Like, everyone's going to laugh at me. You don't just not get a degree. And like, you don't just move out and pursue your dreams. That's nuts. Then senior year, she passed away. And so what that all was that she had Lyme disease. Which when I was 4, she took me like just walking around in like our backyard with like a wash behind our house, with, you know, cacti and plants and everything. And I was like in a little, you know, one of those little scooters that you can ride around in. And she was walking and like rubbed up against some plant and a tick bit her. And she had this crazy rash. And this was like 1990. So she went to the doctors and was like, what the hell? And at that point, it wasn't really known. And so no, it was kind of this mystery thing where they didn't really know what it was and didn't do anything about it. So it got worse. And then that just basically depletes you of your energy, your immune system. There's so many, you know, symptoms and effects to Lyme disease. And in addition to that, she had muscular dystrophy, which I'm also like a big advocate for. And I do a lot of charity work with the Muscular Dystrophy Association. Specifically, it's called FSH muscular dystrophy, which is fascioscapulohumeral, which is what my mom had, which is like the face, shoulders, and like upper body, and their muscles just deteriorate. And you can't whistle, you know, it's hard to talk, hard to eat, hard to reach for things. So between muscular dystrophy and Lyme disease, she was in and out of doctors all the time, on meds all the time, on pills. And they were just so focused on that and keeping her healthy that apparently they missed the fact that like 3 of her 4 like arteries, you know, valves were clogged going into her heart. And out of nowhere, middle of the night, she passed away. And so that was obviously devastating because it was one of those, like a Tuesday night, and you know, we just said goodnight, like kind of like always. But here's then there's this weird thing too, where there's still like a little bit of like a mysterious circumstance around the whole thing, because she was very down in the dumps and very, you know, she had her dark moments that she wasn't able to like live her dreams and like be there for us as much as, you know, she wanted, because when dancing stopped, all she wanted to do was be like an awesome mom and be there for me and my brother. And her, when she knew she was sick, she was like, I just want to live long enough to see my little brother like graduate high school. So she didn't, because he, you know, he was 11 when she passed. And so she was fighting for that. And she had her moments when she was like, she just couldn't be the mom she wanted to be. And she would tell us, but she like that she wrote letters to us, that she contemplated suicide, that if she, like, she had a catheter that was like all of her medicine would go into her body. And she was like, you know, I could just like put air in there and it would like stop my heart. And we're like, holy shit, mom, like, don't do that. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
She said that to you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
It was, yeah, we had that. We were like aware of like that, that could happen. You know, she just had her, you know, very emotional kind of breakdowns, which is understandable, you know, just the frustration, the, you know, whatever it is. She just kind of would have her moments where she would just kind of snap and it would all kind of come out, and we would overhear it, or, you know, she would tell us directly, but that was the thing. So that night, it was weird because it's like, you know, you look back and in hindsight, it's one of those like, huh, because, you know, it's the thing where you're like, hey, good night, mom. Like, you know, I love you. See you tomorrow. And she would just kind of like, you know, look at me and she was just like, hey, like, I love you. I was like, okay, great. Like, love you too. Good night. And she's like, hey, like, I love you. And I was like, okay. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, that, you know, and then my brother said he experienced the same thing. Like, she went in bed and like, kind of like cuddled with him and like read him a book and kind of like stayed there a longer time than usual. And so anyway, so yeah, it was, so that night, like middle of the night, my brother woke me up and was like, the fire engines are here and there's like paramedics in the room, like mom's dying. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, mom's not dying. And it's like 3 a.m. We rushed into the room and there, yeah, she was like on the floor. And we see the paramedics like trying to revive her, you know, tubes and oxygen tanks and everything, just trying to, you know, start her heart again. And we're watching this, and another firefighter swoops in and like moves, like grabs us by the chest and is like, get these kids out of here, and like kicks us out of the room. So me and my brother are like freaking out, you know, and again, he's like, mom's dying. I was like, no, she's not. Like, that doesn't happen. Like, you know, that's, she'll be fine. Rushed her to the hospital. We followed her with my dad. And lo and behold, yeah, they were not able to revive her. And they basically just told us in this like cold hospital room that, you know, she's gone. So that was pretty devastating. And so then, you know, the cause of death on record is heart attack, which, you know, her brother, her best friends, like everyone says, like, there's no way she would have done anything to hurt herself, because all she wanted to do was see my brother graduate high school. It's just like a fluke freak thing. But, you know, us just being her sons, just wonder if like, if she just had enough and did something to induce it, and we'll never know. And it's weird to talk about, you know, but I don't know. It's kind of a mystery, but either way, you know, she's gone. And so that was a very decisive moment in my life. It's one of those things where like, you kind of talk about like living for the day.
Yeah.
And like, you know, just be present and like seize the, you know, carpe diem and all that. But it takes on a different meaning when like 1 second, everything is the world as you know it. And then, you know, you wake up a few hours later and the whole world is upside down and like you're shattered, but like everyone else is just going about business as usual. And you're like, hey, like my mom died. Like, what the hell? Like, you know, isn't everything like closed down? Like, what's going on?
Yeah.
And it's just like business as usual and school's in session. And I'm like, whoa, like, so it was a pretty, pretty shocking experience. And so it was at that moment when I was like, well, then fuck plan B. Like, I'm not going to college. I'm just going to go do this for her and like go make it count. And like every day I'm just going to bust ass and like, I better hit, you know, hit that dream for her. Because it's what she wanted. It's what she encouraged. And so that was it. So I graduated high school, worked all summer as a valet, saved up some money and, $3,000, which I thought was a lot then, but it goes in about 4 days in LA.
Yeah. Literally.
And then moved out here, and another really good friend of mine, who also a chorus friend from Horizon High School, named Petrina, she had a place out here. She was going to the Fashion Institute, and so I stayed with her for like a month to try to, you know, figure everything out. And then my other good buddy, who Rochelle also knows, Danny, who I did my first play ever with in middle school.
Shout out to the first play, baby.
First play, Night of the Living Beauty Pageant. no one's ever heard about it again, but that's what it was. And we were the leads, and he moved out here and we lived together, and that was it. It was kind of like that, you know, the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon dream of, you know, it was like the two of us, like, hey, like, let's do this. And so, so it was, so that was it. And that's how I got to LA. And we were like, let's, you know, every weekend friends would come out and stay with us and, you know, go to the beach and hang out. And we would, you know, work. And I valeted, did restaurant stuff. He did restaurant stuff. And that's, so that takes you up to my LA move.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that. And is it true you had put in the form before that about getting fired from the valet job, just since you just mentioned, from stealing toilet paper and getting fired by giving away a muffin to a woman who just found out she had cancer?
True.
Could you tell?
Both of those things are true. Yeah, I can. Yeah, because, well, so I was at the Marriott, very big chain, billions of dollars, and I had like $0. And so there was, I just discovered this like ginormous vault of like toilet paper and paper towels and tissues that would stock, you know, the 3,000 rooms. So every once in a while, I would just kind of stock up what the apartment needed. I would get some toilet paper, I would get some paper towels, you know, things like that, because it's like every dollar counted.
Yeah.
Well, a Marriott won't miss it. Like this makes a difference to me being like overdrawn or not. And then same with my buddy Danny, who, you know, he worked at a restaurant, and he'd bring all, you know, all the leftovers or the screwed up orders, and that would be like the food we ate. You know, we just tried to survive. But one day I went into work, and they're like, hey, like, don't clock in yet. The manager wants to see you upstairs. And I was like, all right. And so there I walked in, and he was like, have a seat. And I was like, okay. And he's like, can you explain this? And he reaches over the desk and passes me like an 8x10 printed out shot of like a security camera still of me like holding like these like six rolls of toilet paper and like going out the door.
Oh my God.
Mortifying. And I was just like, well, I can't explain that. I'm broke. I'm not making enough in tips. And I tried to save, you know, $12 or whatever. And it's pretty embarrassing. And I'm really sorry. But that's what happened. And I'm like, I can return them. I can go get some now and bring it back. And he was like, look, like, I get it. Like, he was a big advocate of mine. But, you know, he's like, come, you know, word is from upstairs that, you know, theft is theft. And they don't know how long you've done it or what else you've stolen. And you're gone. Like, we got to fire you.
Wow.
And I was like, this is terrifying. I'm like, please don't fire me. Like, I won't be able to, like, obviously I'm broke. Like, if I get fired, I'm really screwed. Like, don't do this to me. Like, I'll make it up. Like, just don't pay me for a week. Like, I'll borrow money from my dad, whatever. But it was too late, and I was fired, and that call back home to my dad was, like, really devastating. So I'm just like, Dad, like, not only, you know, because when I moved out, I was like, I'll give it 2 years, and if I don't make it in 2 years, maybe I'll go back to college, you know? And then I was like, oh, this is good. This might take a little bit longer than, like, 2 years, you know? So, yeah, like, 7 or 8 months in, I'm like, Dad, not only, like, am I, like, a huge, not a movie star yet, but I also just got fired from my day job for stealing toilet paper, you know, and it was just, like, silence, and I'm just like, oh, man. So that was that. That was pretty bad. And then I did a couple, you know, restaurant gigs. One restaurant, when I was at Macaroni Grill, and I had a callback for a commercial that was, like, a long wait, but it was to work with the American History X director.
Great.
I just felt really good about it. And I tried to get my shift covered and I couldn't. And I just called them and I was like, I am not coming in. I have this callback. And I'm like, I kind of like told myself when I moved out, like, I'm never going to miss acting opportunities for like
a right.
job, because I can get restaurant jobs anywhere.
Right.
Didn't show up, got fired, but did book the commercial. And that's what got me SAG. And so lesson learned.
Yes.
It was okay. A sweet, sweet victory. So I did that. And then the next restaurant, because the commercial didn't pay enough, pulled me over for the rest of my life, like I thought it would,
right.
I was working, and there was kind of like a little bakery section. And there was like a regular who came in, this woman who's always so sweet. We'd have, you know, how's it going, honey? Like, how's the career? And I'd ask about her family or grandkids. And one day she came in and she was just like so down in the dumps and just like unlike any energy she had ever brought in before. And she would always get like, you know, like a vanilla latte and banana nut muffin. It was like always her thing. And so she basically told me that she had just come from the doctor and found out she has like breast cancer, and it's like really bad and really scary, and started like getting teary eyed and emotional. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm so sorry. And I was there for her. And then at the end, I was like, you know what, just, it's on me. Like, you know, just to have it, enjoy it, like get out of here, you know, have a good one.
Yeah.
But yeah, the busboy saw that, reported me to the manager.
No.
Said I was giving away free pastries, and the manager was like, you know, is this true? And I was like, yeah, but it's like, you throw them away at the end of the day. Like, I literally, like, that's our instruction. Like, at the end of the day, like, we throw away croissants and muffins and cookies, like, in the trash. Like, you don't even give them to homeless people, which we tried to set up before. You literally throw them in the garbage can. I gave them to someone who just found out she has cancer, and she comes in all the time. And again, fired.
I cannot believe you were fired for the muffin. The toilet paper is like a little corporate, still ridiculous, but it's like Marriott is so corporate, but a muffin at a restaurant, come on.
I said the same thing. I was like, I can't believe it's, but to tell these stories now is so full circle. And I did do like an interview once for a magazine, like Zoe magazine. And they did a photo shoot with me with like toilet paper, which was also an awesome full circle, like F you moment. Even though I can't advocate theft. Like, I did steal. That is wrong. Like, I was in the wrong.
Yeah.
Sure. But, like, I didn't think I'd be fired for it. I thought there was a way to, like, apologize or, you know, make up for it. But that's true. But just, like, one of those weird, again, like, a full circle. It just, like, I was, you know, I was in one spot. And then you, like, kind of, like, wake up and you're in this whole other realm. And life is just crazy.
Yeah, wow. Thank you for sharing those moments, because I feel like people who are in the grind and getting fired from those jobs at the time, I've also been, have similar situations from like my starter jobs of, you know, it just doesn't quite work out. You miss for that callback and they're like, hey, it's the third time. And you're like, please, please, please. However, it's so devastating at the time. And yet the perspective is helpful. So if anyone's recently been fired from a job in the pandemic or something, I'm glad they can like hear from your story and see where you are now.
Yeah, I agree. I think when you get fired, it's obviously devastating and mortifying and so scary. But, you know, there are other jobs, there's ways to figure it out, but it's hard and it's scary. And it's still scary and hard now. I mean, yeah, I've been fired. Here's another crazy fire story. Not even a restaurant. This was an indie movie that I auditioned for and booked. And I was like, supposed to be like the owner of this diner. And I don't know, I kind of got like inspired to be like, oh, because he was kind of like, he was like the owner of a diner where everyone would come in and kind of tell him their stories of how this night went down. Mm. Guy was like kind of like half like investigator, like he wanted to figure out what happened that night, but also like half diner owner. And so I just had this random like thought, and I was just like, what if like he's always got like a toothpick and he's kind of like this like old school, like, you know, like Law and Order, like detective, but like, you know, there's toothpicks in the diner, whatever. So, like, I didn't even meet the director yet because it was just an audition with casting. And, like, you know, wardrobe had contacted me to get my sizes and all that. And I said to them, I was like, you know, by the way, you know, if you could have, like, some toothpicks or something there, like, standing by when I show up on my first day, like, that would be awesome. Because, like, there's something I kind of, like, want to do and, like, try it out. But I'm like, you know, if you need me to bring my own in, like, let me know. I just figured you'd want to, like, you know, correspond, like, the look or the wood or the rights, whatever. And hours later, I'm like, I'm in a movie theater. I'm sitting back when you can go to movie theaters. And I was watching a movie and I missed like, I don't know, three calls from my managers and agents. And I get out of the movie and call them back. And he was like, dude, one word for you, toothpick. I was like, what?
What?
You've been fired from the movie because the director thinks like you're high maintenance and you were like demanding toothpicks. I was like, what? Like, what? I'm like, Wardrobe called me and asked me like what I needed, like my sizes. And like, I was just like, if you can have toothpicks, that would be great. And if not, I'll bring my own. I'm like, I don't even understand like what's happening right now. And the director was like, oh, you're too high maintenance. Like you're making demands, like you're fired. And I was replaced on a movie. So,
wow.
And I was shocked about that. So yeah, crazy, crazy things have happened.
Oh my goodness. I'm glad you can laugh about it now. I mean, that seems extreme.
They still had to pay me because they fired me like the day up. So it was kind of a win-win actually, because I still got that. And I didn't have to work with someone who thought I was high maintenance, which like, I was like, I've collaborated with so many amazing people. And like, we do that. Like, we talk about things like to tell the story the best, you know, and what you want visually. And it's so weird. Like I couldn't even ask a question without getting fired. So I guess for the best, but yeah, some weird things in my years.
Yeah, man. Tricky things happen for sure. Oh, I worked in events at the Academy years and years ago. And like, Sometimes I would just greet people in the garage, and some people sometimes I would like pass out muffins or whatever. And then, you know, too many
muffins, huh? Too soon.
Yeah, literally like, muffins.
Twist the knife, why don't you, Chelsea? Yeah, okay. Did they have toothpicks on them too? Yeah.
Yeah, literally, they probably did. And eventually was let go because missed too many things. And then I was so devastated at the time because I got to be a seat filler at the Oscars. And I was like, if I can't be a seat filler of the Oscars, like my life will be like ruined. And now I look back, I'm like, well, this is also very like wishful thinking. But I'm like, what if one day I was like the girl in the garage and then came back in the way that I actually wanted to be and was, you know, invited or there for another reason? That would be a beautiful story. It's not one right now, but hey, that's
yet. No, but it will be. And what a beautiful thing. And how nice will you be to those seat fillers and people passing you muffins, you know? And that's the big thing I've seen is like the empathy from the other side of like any like major assholes I've worked with on shows or movies. I feel like it's always like 1,000% of the time that they've never struggled. Like they've never had a day job. They've never known the other side of things and like how bad it is, or they've never done like theater and understand there's like a cast and a crew and everyone works together. Like they're just like, I'm the star and everyone like is lucky I'm here. But I think it comes from like an insecurity really. But I mean, yeah, most people that like I jive with the best on sets are all people like us that have like been in the shit and like know what it very well could be and know what it has been. But yeah, I think I get it where it's like when all you're looking for is validation and like someone to tell you like, hey, like you're talented, you're awesome, like you're good enough, you're hired. And then like, yeah, you get fired from like restaurant, ballet. It's like, what? Like, I can't even do that right. Like, yeah, it's like your whole right. image of yourself is like, what am I? Like, I thought I could succeed. Can I not? Like, does the world think I'm just like some loser? And so, yeah, it definitely, you know, affects you. It's like, how do you go to an audition the next day being like, I just got fired, you know? Like, it's just, it's really, it does a number on you. You know, it's brutal.
For sure. Absolutely. It's so devastating at the time when really it's like there's something there. Like the people getting fired from these jobs, it's like it's because you were meant to do Glee and then the next thing. And like you weren't meant to be there for, you know, years and years and years. But then I also know some wonderful people who are also very talented that, you know, for some reason are at those jobs for years and years. And that's not to say it can't work out. And it's like for a reason. You know, and the bosses can see it too. They can see the ones that are like not, they just somehow know that you're not like in it for the long haul at these jobs. They're like, oh, you want to do this other thing.
Do you think you're better than me? Like, that's the attitude like that I got, like Macaroni Grill or those restaurants was like, you know, they didn't understand like how I could want to do anything else, but like deliver plates of food to mean people, you know? So it was like, well, no, like I'm just doing this to like pay my rent, but I have other dreams that I want to accomplish. But yeah, it was rare that I had bosses that understood that. And then, you know, the empathetic side is like, who knows what their dreams were that led them to that point and like what frustrations they're encountering or battling now or in the past. And so it's like, is there something psychologically there where like, you know, who knows? Yeah. Who knows? But here we are.
That's amazing. Hey, popping in quickly to recommend my new virtual therapy company that I'm obsessed with. I started doing therapy online virtually with this company, BetterHelp, H-E-L-P. And I was super against doing virtual therapy because I was like, that's weird. And the whole point is to connect in person. But I decided to give it a try. And I don't know what else to say besides I cannot recommend it enough. Everyone is a licensed professional therapist. And something I like about it is that all these therapists have been doing virtual therapy before COVID. And if you use code DOL, you'll get 10% off your first month. BetterHelp.com/DOL. Again, that's BetterHelp.com/DOL, like dying of laughter, DOL. I couldn't be more proud to partner with them and to recommend them. I personally use it. I personally love it. And I hope you do too.
These are life lessons that it's like, you know, it's something interesting. And what you're saying about like who you relate with on sets, I always find it so interesting just to go there for one moment and then we'll go back to your grief story. But people on sets and successful people, you know, some of my friends that are killing it that never did any theater really interest me. I'm like, wow, like you you never did like a play or like high school plays. And, you know, so many of us did, but so many people didn't. And I'm like, whoa, how did you even know how to do all this without that foundation? You know, it interests me.
I do. It is interesting. And the big, yeah, the big difference I've seen is that someone who's done theater, I feel like, respects and understands and is curious about everybody on set. Because, you know, in theater, you're like, we need you to build that set and bring that prop and get the microphone working and have that jacket ready to like take off and put on. Like, it's everybody is equal and everybody counts to tell the story for the audience, like right now, like we're in this together. And like, if they're not waiting in the wings, like you're late and the whole thing is derailed. But on a set, I feel like, yeah, people who've done theater get that. And you're like, oh, awesome. Like, you know, thank you, like Mr. Sound Guy and, you know, Mr. Whatever, boom operator and wardrobe and makeup and everything. But I feel like people who have not done that, yeah, it's just like everyone is here for the actors. Because to the world, that's what it is. Like the world, you know, you watch right. a show or movie and it's like the top three or four actors are doing, you know, the press junkets and this and that. But like no one else really gets to be the hero unless it's like the Oscars or Emmys. And most people, you know, are fast forwarding or not as into, you know, who the best editor is in their betting pool. So yeah, there's to me, it's like, it's all glorified and like, we need everyone. And then even yeah, editing like that, so many of my performances have just been better because of the editor. And I'm like, damn, like nice job with that cut. Like that looks great. Like I didn't even do that, but they make me look awesome. So it really is just this collaborative group team effort.
You are so correct in editing, just to say for 1 second, this is about you. I don't want to talk about myself, but no, just editing, since you brought it up, my new life is I'm producing content for BuzzFeed that I'm in. And I'm, as of a couple weeks ago, editing my own stuff. It's super cool and empowering because I'm like, cool, the video is me and now I can make it look how I want. And I'm like, oh my God, the edit takes me like 3 days for a 4-minute video. It's so hard. I'm like, I don't want to edit this. It's so hard. So shout out to editors. They are the most amazing people ever. I'm like, I never want
to
do this.
Because they have to match. First of all, congratulations to you on your BuzzFeed job. That's amazing. And I can't wait to watch and see all the content. So
you are so nice.
And secondly, yes, because it's like, it's one of the few jobs, I feel like, as an editor. This is just a whole podcast about editing. But seriously, quick side note is that they have to master the creative part and the technical part, because they have to decide, like, you know, which takes, you know, and which emotions kind of like run through the through line and tell the story the best and have the most impact. But then, like, you know, the technical part of like editing the exact millisecond and splicing that together with that reaction and this reaction, making sure all the continuity is the same take after take, like that's a great job that, again, like some actors I've worked with that have not done theater don't even know the editor's name. And I'm just like, this is a disaster.
There's the cut you write, the cut you shoot, and the cut you edit. And it's three different cuts. Yeah.
Yeah. Oftentimes what we shoot, because, you know, like people are like, oh, do you watch yourself? You're like, do you watch yourself? I was like, I do. But like, it's not like I'm studying myself. It's more just like, I'm so curious to see what the final result looks like. Cause like, I know my experience on set that day, but then like I watch and it's like, it's always educational to be like, huh, like, wow, they went with that, like that take or that reaction or that. And I was like, it's just, I learned something every time watching, right, like where it goes from the day of shooting to what the audience sees. And it's never, you know, what you think it'll be.
Totally. Whereas theater, it is what it is. Like, it literally, what you prep is what you will receive, pretty much what the audience is going to get. And shout out to all the theater kids out there, because theater is hard. Do you ever feel like, well, your situation, you've done so many wonderful roles with meaty, cool storylines. Sometimes I'm like, how did I get here? I'll have a few lines on a show and I'm trying to rehearse it and make it perfect. And I'm like, I used to like do 90-minute plays talking every scene, and now it's like a big deal to do this one scene. I'm like, how did I get here? Theater's hard. Do you ever
that way this morning, honestly, because I had an audition. Maybe I'll get it, so I don't even want to like trash talk what show it is.
Okay.
It's a pretty big show, and like, you know, their fifth season, and the part is like 2.5 pages. And I'm like busting ass on this audition, And yeah, like part of there's like an Entourage, which is you know, if for anyone who doesn't know, show on HBO about an actor and all of his friends, and like they made it big. And Johnny Drama is like the brother of the movie star, who is like kind of like me, like, you know, a working actor, but like a known entity, but yes, not a huge star. And he has like this great line where he's like, you know, like, I've done, you know, 5 TV shows and, you know, 16 movies and, you know, this and that, like, and still they make me sing for my supper. And I was like, man, like, I just so resonate with that. Cause it's like, man, like, I've done like, you know, it's like, yeah, 6 years on Glee, 3 years on Switched at Birth. I've worked with, you know, Woody Allen, Clint Eastwood, Aaron Sorkin. And I'm like, and really, like, you still need to see that I can do like these 2 pages for this show that like I probably won't get. And so there is that mentality of like, still, like, does this end? But it doesn't. And then, and back in the day, like when I went to all these like SAG, you know, Q&As, Ryan Gosling, who's like one of my idols, was there and talking about like how he hates auditioning. And it's like such a shit process because it's not at all like what it'll be like on set. But his whole point was just like, but what else are they going to do? There, it really is no other way to know that that person can do that unless they see it. So it's like, yeah, until you come up with some other magical solution, it kind of is what it is. And I was like, okay. So like then was like the mind shift of like, just embrace it, because like, that's so true. Like you can't fight it. Like this is the system, and like probably the best system. So you just got to like own it and figure it out and like master it. But yeah, I do feel like that for sure. But also shout out to theater kids, because I do feel like theater, just more people need to do theater. You know, there's like a camaraderie, there's an understanding, there's a compassion, there's like, no matter, you know, the race, economic status, like everyone's equal. Everyone depends on everyone to hit their marks, say their lines, know their cues. And I was like, man, if the whole world did theater, like we'd be a little bit better. I think we'd all, you know, work together a little more and like understand, like we're all in this together and we all want the same thing. Like, just get over your shit. Stop it.
Just get over your shit. That's all we all have to do. Just get over our shit. And what a world we could be.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Why don't they run with that slogan?
Right? Okay, let's go back. I feel like I could like talk shop about this like all day. I'm like, oh wait, my podcast also is about grief. So I'm gonna go back for a second, and we'll jump back here. So back to high school and your mom, that was, you know, a very profound time to be in high school. There's all these things going on. I'm curious how your grief has shifted from when you were in high school to your experience with grief today.
Wow, that's a deep, great question. Shifted is an interesting word. I feel like it just kind of like planted itself in me and like shaped everything that I am. I feel like it was really odd in high school, and it caused and still causes an insecurity, because like you go back to, you know, it's like fairly popular in high school. You can ask Rochelle. I promise you I'm not lying.
I don't think I have to ask anyone to know that, but
I was a known entity. I was the vice president of my senior class. Huge deal. But anyway,
going it actually was back at the time. That was a big deal. Okay,
it was. Oh yeah, you had like hang all the poster boards, and it was like the year before I lost, and so to come back and win was honestly at that time a dream come true. All right, wait. So while with it, just side note, and I promise I'll come back.
Okay.
But side note about dreams was that like, I drove past that high school every day with my dad going to the middle school, Sunrise Middle School, and there at the high school, Horizon High School, it was like this giant gray, ugly concrete slab that was like Horizon High School. It was like just disgusting. And I was like, Dad, like someone should like paint that like green and gold and make it like the school colors. And like, it would be so awesome. And he's like, oh, well, maybe you can do it when you get to school. So like when I became vice president, my pitch to the school was like, hey, like, can we, our senior class gift, make that sign like beautiful, and it happened, and they like approved it, and we like raised the money, and we ended up buying like tiles, because I guess the paint would have gotten destroyed in the sun, and we had all these beautiful green and gold tiles. And so now every time I go back there or drive past it, it says it, and it's like class of 04, and I was like, I did that, and it's awesome. So that's a cool story. So anyway, going back to it, I missed school for about 4 days. Like, it happened, my mom died on a Tuesday night. And then I missed the rest of that week. And I knew going back, just like word would travel really fast. This is before social media, but still, there's choir, there's drama, there's gossip and rumors. And I knew walking back into that school, everyone would look at me differently. It was like this like weird, like, how do they treat me now? Is there like a sympathetic thing? Is there like, do we treat him normally? do they know my mom died? Are they going to treat me with kid gloves? Do they not know? So it's like this paranoia, this insecurity of like, now I'm going back to school and I'm different than everyone else. And it's almost like I can imagine, I don't know, but it's like a closeted feeling, you know, of like, I have this like secret and like, who knows? And like, are they talking about me? And like, it causes this very weird thing. And then, you know, there's those moments when everyone's like, oh, like your mom, you know? And I was like, you know, and they're like, oh shit, dude, like, I'm so sorry. And then you're like, no, like, it's cool. But then you're like, God damn, like, I want to go cry now. And like, so it's like this weird, like, how do I behave? And it's like, do I be vulnerable? Do I like act depressed? And I think it caused me to like be more gregarious and bubbly and like friendly, because I was like, I'm fine, like, it's all good, like, I'm all good, like, you know, it's fine, like, that happened, but like, hey, like, I'm still me, which is like exhausting. And I think, yeah, I brought that into much of my adult life. And then I worked with a great acting coach / mentor, and he kind of just like, get rid of that, like, that's a big block, like, you're just constantly like either like draining yourself or masking how you really feel, and like, that's gonna hurt you as an actor. Like, you just gotta like, if you're down and like you're fucking pissed and you're raging or you're depressed, like, it is what it is. And so when you walk into that house party, like, just be however you are, and like, that's what you're supposed to be, and like, that you attract what you'll attract, and like, it is what it is. But like, you don't have to put a show on for everyone. Like, you know, it's like that Goodwill Hunting thing of like, you know, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. You know, it's not your fault. Like that Robin Williams scene of like, you know, I don't have to, what's the word? I don't have to, sorry?
People please?
Yeah. Kind of like, yeah, just like, I don't have to like make up for something that like I didn't do wrong. You know, I don't have to compensate. There it is. Thank you very much. Thank you. So yeah. And that was a big, that was a big shift that happened, I think. But even nowadays, especially nowadays with a baby, I mean, it's like, I just see so many of my friends, like, for example, you know, we talked about it earlier, but, like, you know, my wife's mom passed away literally the day before he was born, which I think the death sent her body into shock and caused him to come a couple weeks early. But it's like, you know, so she had one of the big things we bonded over, actually, like, on our first date, we met doing Much Ado About Nothing, Shakespeare.
Oh my God.
At Casa Vega, great Mexican place in LA. We both realized that she had lost her dad when she was 17 and I lost my mom when I was 16. And so that was a huge moment, because, oh, now we both get each other, because everything I'm talking about, she already inherently knew, which is like huge. Cause like, I feel like, oh, you've been through some shit, like, you know, tragedy at that age. Like, we get each other, and no one, it was like this kind of a secret club, you know, that you don't want to be in, but you're in. And so then when her mom died, I mean, so she now has no parents, and my mom is gone, and my dad's in Arizona. And so it's like, there's like one grandparent in a different state. And so it's like, it's really hard, you know, like, you see like, oh, so many of my other friends have like, oh, like, they have like four parents around, or like, oh, the both parents are over and like babysitting, and everyone's like healthy, and like, they have care, you know, babysitters and help. And I'm like, man, like, that must be really nice, you know, because like, it's kind of like just us out here, and like, it's really, really hard. And so even that is kind of like the constant reminder, and like, so many things that I'm like, man, like, I wish my mom could see my son right now. And like, I wish he could meet his grandma, grandmothers, you know, like, what they would show him, what they would teach him that he'll never know. So that sucks, you know. And then I feel robbed too, because I was 17 and I knew my mom as like my mom, who like makes lunches and dinners and like, you know, signs field trip permission slips and like, you know, supports me. And yeah, but like, we didn't really get to talk as like person to person about like, you know, your politics, your religion, like dreams, like, you know, get into it, that I feel like most people kind of transition into as like an adult. So that sucks too, because there's so many things I wish I could ask her daily, you know. Or even the fact that like she, you know, maybe she's looking down from somewhere, seeing me do what I'm doing, but who the hell knows? And that sucks too, because I'm like, man, she'd be like really proud, and like, too bad I don't get to like share this with her, you know, physically. So a lot of that hurts daily, and it's, you know, there's not a day that goes by when I'm not thinking about her and replaying that. So, but you know, then the flip side of it, I feel like I do, you know, I live for her, and like things that I do, things I say, the way I treat people, the way, you know, I say what you mean what you say, like, you know, carpe diem. It's really because of that, because I truly understand that, like, tonight I could go to sleep and not wake up. And so, like, I better, like, tell everyone exactly how I'm feeling, like, do what I want to do and, like, cross everything off the list, because I don't know that there's a tomorrow, which could also has its negatives when you're, like, living like that, you know what I mean? Like, but that's kind of like what I know. I feel like every day could be the last. And so that's kind of informed who I am.
Mm. Thank you for sharing that. And that's really beautiful that you guys bonded on one of your first dates about these mutual losses, even though it's tragic. That's really, like, cool is not the right word, but I'm like, oh my God, that's so beautiful that you both.
It is beautiful. Yeah. You find someone who's got, like, an understanding of it. And also just, you know, just an inherent understanding of people, of a community that's lost a parent that young. Weren't you about the same age?
Yeah, I was 19 when my dad died of ALS, which is kind of like a cousin of muscular dystrophy, which I know
it
your
is.
Mom had other things going on as well. But yeah, I'm familiar with muscular dystrophy and paralysis.
And then I with ALS, and I'm so sorry. And so were you in college?
I was, yeah, freshman in college. So we were, yeah, like around the same, you know, close in age.
And, for sure.
Yeah.
And did you feel a similar thing? Like, were you, like, when you showed up, when everyone knew, was it weird, like a weird, like, oh, I'm different now, but, like, I'm not, but I am.
Totally. I think, you know, those teenage years are interesting because you have a lot of perspective. You're close to fully formed, but you're not. So there's this, like, a little bit of a barrier between you and the understanding. Whereas, like, now if anything were to happen, I would, well, it would be horrible as well, but I feel like I would have a little bit more clarity about my boundaries. And at that time, I was kind of just like, I just want to keep going and riding on the momentum so that it's not awkward. I relate to what you're saying about just being like, it's all good. Let's keep doing plays. And I was in a play the night he died, you know, it was like opening night. And I was like, no, I'm good. I'm in, I'm going to do all the plays. Mm-hmm, and, like, cause you just, like, it's just what you do. But also,
like you said, that was a great word. Like, you just, because you don't want it to be awkward,
yeah.
Which is so weird. Because you're like, hey, like I'm the one experiencing this, like, devastating loss. But, like, I'm worried about you feeling awkward now around me. And so, yes, that weird compensating for, like, something that happened to you. It's like a weird, like, victim thing that, yeah, you know, you still deal with. I still deal with to this day. It's very strange.
Well, it's weird that in our culture we just don't address death in depth. Or really at all, you know, it's just a taboo topic. It's not something that's, like, acceptable dinner table conversation. And while, yeah, I don't think it's necessary to dwell and be sad all the time, I think if we were to normalize the conversations around death, it would just be less of a thing. Whereas, you know, that's kind of like one of the missions of the podcast. I'm like, why does it have to be so bizarre? I mean, to this day, I'm like, it's like 10 years later, some people will be like, I'm so sorry. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I asked you. Oh my God. And I'm like, it's actually okay. His name was Lloyd. Here's what he was like. It's sad, but it's okay, you know? But other people,
I do know,
just,
and I think, like, because I think there's a huge amount of fear around death in the fact that, like, you know, it's inevitable, like, it's going to happen to you, but you don't know when or how long you've got or how it's even going to go down, and hence, you know, the coronavirus panic, which I completely, you know, get and feel. But I think there's, like, that fear, but, like, because what happened to us happened, I think there's, like, an understanding that fear kind of goes away because, okay, well, like, my worst fear happened and, like, now I'm still here to talk about it and, like, I understand it now. And so, like, there is this, like, veil lifted and, like, now we can confront it. But I think if it hasn't happened to you, yeah, you kind of want to keep it at bay and, like, keep that guard up, you know? And the other big thing I learned through my mom's passing was, like, my God, death is a business. It's, like, insane, like, you know, the money for the services, the coffin, the, you know, cremations, funerals, paperwork, and just the stress I saw my dad go through, like, accounts and, you know, social security, and gosh, it's like the last thing you want to deal with is all that when you're dealing with the emotional, like, gravity of that. And so I think that's very important. And again, like, that's a huge thing my wife pushes too, which is, like, life insurance and, like, you know, paperwork, like, get everything in order. And, like, yeah, it sucks to talk about, but, like, it's going to happen. And, like, I'd rather not have to, you know, be at a loss or have even more stress and grief and anxiety on top of what is there emotionally, because, like, it's going to happen. So, like, what are we doing? And so, yeah, that's a big thing that I think a lot of people don't, realize, that it's just kind of like that happens. And, like, you wake up the next day and get back to it. I'm like, no, like, there's, like, weeks of of like red tape and stuff that you have to go through, and it's like ridiculous, you know, and those calls are just like the most awkward. And so yeah, lots of lessons learned with what happened to us.
How is your wife doing? That's a lot that she went through, this second loss right before the birth of her son. I'm curious, yeah, how is she feeling, and how are you guys able to support each other in this time?
I mean, it was very, very hard for both of us, but especially her at first, because, you know, it's like all she wanted to do was share her child with her mother. And so to not get to do that at all is just heartbreaking. And, you know, things keep coming up, you know, like Mother's Day and, you know, July 4th and the Emmys, like, you know, we all used to get together and they talk about the dresses and the red carpet and who we think is going to win and have champagne and the whole thing. And it's like, well, I guess that's not happening. You know, so it's like everything is a constant reminder. So it's still tough, but again, I think the fact that we've both been through it before, that I can understand it, that we talk about it, and it's nothing like hidden or swept under the rug. Like, you know, we speak about how we feel, and, you know, if she's having a rough day, then I just step up and, you know, do whatever I can do to help her and take care of the baby more, and vice versa. And I think it's just communication. Right now she's doing really well. Like, honestly, like the strongest woman I've ever seen, because the fact that she had to deal with that with her mom and then give birth like within 24 hours, I was like, fuck, you are a warrior. Rough as it was, we're getting back to, you know, some sense of normalcy and routine now, as much as one can. Right. And she's back. She's like, you know, working from home, and we just kind of split up our time with, you know, what she has to do, what I have to do, watching the baby, and, you know, again, very, very limited help because no one's really here, and there's a virus, so it's not like we can just have people over and we're like freaked out about daycare and, you know, there's so many unknowns. And so is it easy? No, but I think communication is 100%, you know, the key to making it work, and just letting, like, I'm like, listen, I need like an hour to go, like, just for a drive and like to breathe and like get away. Like, otherwise, like, this is like, I'm gonna like snap, you know? And she's like, okay, like, cool, like, go do it. And then same thing, you know, she's like, hey, like, I need to sleep, like, now, like, I'm like done. Like, can you just like watch it, you know, watch Dylan? And I was like, yeah, of course. So it's that. It's like just telling, you know, telling each other where we're at, so that we can help each other, because marriage.
Because hashtag marriage.
Hashtag marriage.
Yeah. How old is Dylan now?
He'll be 6 months next week.
Wow.
A week from today, actually. He'll be 6 months. I know. It's crazy. Feels like 6 months, but then sometimes it feels like just yesterday, and sometimes it's like 40 years. Like, it's all out of whack, but he's doing well, and he's adorable, and he's healthy, and just makes us smile and laugh every day, and it's beautiful. That's the thing, too. We're like, oh, my gosh, like, what kind of a parent am I going to be? And there's, like, all the fears that come with that. And, like, you know, am I going to love him? Like, I see other parents love their babies. But, like, it all just happens the way it's supposed to. And it's all just beautiful. And it's, like, it's truly, like a love you I've never experienced. I couldn't imagine it. Like, I really, you know, it's one of those things, like, oh, you don't know until you're a parent. But, like, you don't. Like, it's all the emotions. But I just feel a lot more full now, because of him, and it really is beautiful. So yeah.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. Seeing my friends that have had babies specifically this year in quarantine, it's so special, and I'm like, your son is a quarantined baby through and through, like 2020 baby.
Rochelle was the one, she said one of the best lines. She was like, what a cool origin story. I was like, just definitely you grow up quick. But yeah,
I'm curious your perspective on grief and comedy and the intersection of the awkward or lighter moments around grief. So a question I like to ask is there something particularly funny or awkward or unique about your grief story that comes to mind? I feel like so often grief conversations are so heavy, and you're such like a bubbly, gregarious guy. Is there anything that comes to mind about your grief that was funny or weird?
I mean, the only thing that like just popped in my head, which I think it only made the biggest impression because it was like the first time it happened, was what I kind of alluded to earlier with like the your mom jokes. Because I remember, you know, there's like a group of guys and I'm still very close with, but it was like, you know, back in the choir days and we're hanging out, and it was, you know, just that stupid, like, I said something about like, oh, like, you know, what about that infrared light or whatever? And he was like, your mom's an infrared light. And I was like, well, my mom died. And everyone got like real fucking weird. And he, like, to this day still apologizes. but we're still, you know, close friends. But I thought, you know, that was weird and that is funny. But I'm like, but I can't, like, but like, oh, if I laugh, like, am I insensitive and am I weird? But like, it's funny, and like, it's funny that he feels bad, but like, you know, it's one of those weird, like, all the emotions are like in that one sentence. But to your point about, you know, the comedy of it, I think we have to laugh at it in order to, like, in order to cope, and in order to, like, understand, and in order to bond. And I find that even with a lot of, you know, art in general, like, you know, movies, TV shows, like, those things that are, like, kind of, like, inappropriate, but, like, you can laugh at it. It's, like, it's just, like, this great equalizer, I feel like, when, like, it's, like, if the whole audience is laughing together, it's, like, okay, we can handle, like, a very sensitive issue and a sensitive topic, because, like, hey, you're laughing and I'm laughing, like, we're connected over what we're seeing, and, like, there's, like, a release, you know, like, there's something, it's all pent up in your body, and laughing kind of helps get it out. And there, that's, you know, I don't want to get into the whole thing with, you know, political correctness and cancel culture, and there's a whole other kind of podcast, but I mean, there is a worry of mine of, like, you know, when does, like, the laughing stop, and, like, what can we say anymore without, like, losing your entire livelihood and career, when you're like, it's just kind of like a coping mechanism, I feel like, for so many people. Not that offensive and inappropriate things are okay, but I think it's like, if it helps you get by, and like, you're able to laugh at your own circumstance and something that happened to you, then I feel like then you should be the one to decide if it's funny, because like, it's your life, and like, it's your parent, and it's your, you know, your circumstance. And if you don't find it funny, fine. Okay, here's another story that I just thought of, was when, so we cremated my mom, and years later, like, my dad, brother, and me all went to, like, drive up to this mountain in Arizona where, like, she just loved, and we could see it from her backyard, and we'd hike it, and we had, like, the bag of, you know, ashes, and my dad, like, wanted to document it and had the camera, and he was just like, okay, like, on three, say bye-bye, mommy, and we were like, we just, like, died laughing, but we burst out laughing, because it was just such, like, just a random, like, just such an obscure, like, surreal, like, is this really happening, like, are the three of us on some mountaintop, like, saying bye-bye, and then we threw the ashes, and they all came back at us with, like, the wind, and it was, like, it was this moment, like, the three of us just kind of, like, cracked up, like, crying, laughing, but, like, it was the most cathartic, therapeutic, like, bonding thing that could have happened, as if, like, she was there, like, wanting us to, like, laugh together as a family and, like, be okay. And so I guess personally, my experience is that, like, laughter is the best medicine, and it's helped us bond, because we all know it hurts, and we've cried, and it sucks, and we know that. Like, that's inherent, of course. Like, we're wrecked. So, like, we can live in that, or we can, like, we can try to, like, laugh and, like, know that there is life to be led, and we do it for her, and she'd want us to be happy, and you know, and not stay in that darkness. So personally, I think comedy is essential.
Thanks for sharing that. And I can imagine, I can just picture that. You're like, well, say goodbye. You know, what else are you going to say? Like, say cheese? Like, no, right. Like, we're saying goodbye.
So. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, he just said that, right. It was just a very, like, whoa, like, this is happening. Like, this is real, you know? But yeah, I think the laughter kind of, like, has, like, that the levity of the moment that was needed. So it wasn't as dark as, you know, you think it's going to be when you talk about spreading someone's ashes.
It's so surreal that there's so many people with two parents just on this earth, and that will have them for such a long time. And sometimes I think about that. I'm like, wow. Some people are going to have their parents their whole life, and some people just aren't. And it's interesting that we're all just existing in this world with such different experiences. But I think a lot more people lose a parent than they think. But when it's you, it feels like it's only you, because it's uncommon enough that it's not like all your buddies, but it's common enough that somehow we're sprinkled around this earth together. Like, it is happening.
Well, and I think, I mean, again, for me personally, I know there was, you know, there wasn't that social media connection. Like, you know, like, your clique, your crew was kind of like who was around. And I was definitely, and I think at that age, you know, teenagers, like, you're kind of like the first of your posse, you know, to have that happen. And so it is weird. We're like, oh yeah, people's parents die, but, like, not this young. Like, this is really weird. And, like, this is not how it's supposed to happen, you know? So yeah, I agree with you. But again, I think just, you know, life lesson. It's everyone's, like you said, where you're like, it's happening to me and it's like my story and my perspective. I think like that's everyone's situation with everything. That's everyone's circumstance, you know, is that like all people can really know is what's happening and what's happened to them personally. But there is that weirdness of like, even nowadays, there's people that are like, you know, 35, 40, and they're like, oh my gosh, like, you know, my mom, and you know, she's in the hospital. And there's like the first instinct is like, yeah, like that's obviously terrible and tragic, but I'm like, well, that's pretty nice. You got her till 35, huh? You know, but I'm like, I don't want to say that reaction. Because like, yeah. Cause then you're like, well, no, like, cause there you go. Like, I can't even joke about that because like, well, I'm the asshole because like they're going through it right now. I'm like, they're going through what I went through 20 years ago. So
is a hard one for me when they're like, yeah, it's like 33. They're like 33. And then they're like, oh, I'm so devastated on the floor crying about like my grandmother. And it like, of course that's sad for any death, but it's like my grandparents also died when I was in high school. And that was like, not even my main story. That was like the least of my problems. Like, sadly, I was like also a lot of other things. And
yeah, so and it's like the biggest thing is like a footnote. And you're like, no, like that was like, that this is your biggest thing though. Like I've been there, done that. And so, but again, that's all you know. But the perspective of that is like, but yeah, like, come on, you're 35. Like they saw you like have kids. They saw you get the house. They saw you do your job. I was like, my mom doesn't even like know who I am as like a man, you know. But you can't understand that unless you've been there. So that's why it's great talking to you. You know, that's why I've married the woman I married. Like there's that inherent thing of like, there's your whole perspective of the whole world. Is shifted, and you won't really understand it unless it happened to you, you know, at that age. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other side of it where like, I'm like, well, lucky that we haven't lost, you know, both, and we didn't lose, you know, I wasn't in, you know, foster care or orphaned. And like, I did have, you know, a very loving mother up until she left. And I have this awesome fucking dad who like stepped up and just like, his whole mission was like, just keep the wheels rolling and like, let's not like shatter the whole family. Like I'll, you know, he just great example of like just how to like step up, and he like became like both parents like overnight, and it was awe-inspiring. So there's that side of it too, where I'm like, okay, like it, you know, it's like it could have been worse, even though like that is the worst thing. So there's just, you know, so many things that it's such a sensitive issue, I think, for so many people. So it's like all I can do is just be honest about my own experience and my own thoughts, because who's to tell me that it's wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, preach. I'm here to tell you it is right, Max.
Amen, sister. Amen. Preach. Yes. Yeah.
And I'm laughing at the your mom joke. I mean, that just, yeah, I totally, that's like, feels like a different time now, but like the your mom jokes and like,
well, it was like Napoleon Dynamite, remember? It was like, your mom goes to college, you know? It was like, so it became, everything was like, your mom has homework tonight, you know? It was like, what? Like, it didn't even make sense, you know? Like, you know, but it was just like a thing that we did, because, yeah.
They're like, your mom didn't do this. And you're like, yeah, she actually didn't. She did not survive, and she did not do that.
Right. I know. But then you're like, oh, I don't want to make you feel bad. But then you're like, but now, like, now you made me feel bad. And so it gets this weird, like, again, compensating so that they don't feel awkward about your tragedy.
It is weird. And I get that with, like, you know, girls make a lot of, like, you know, daddy issues. Like, daddy issues is the name of a podcast, a show, of books, of a million things. And people will be like, haha, like, daddy issues. I was like, yeah, it's weird. I'm not like, oh my God, my dad issues. But I'm like, oh, I probably do have those. So
the flip side is like, instead of like, oh, your mom or dad issues, I feel like there's the other side when people are trying to be nice of like, oh, like, is your dad going to walk you down the aisle? You know, and you're like, you know, or like with me, where like, you know, I've done interviews where they're like, is your mom just so proud? And you're like, I don't know.
What do you say when that?
I do. I say that. I'm like, she died. Like, she's passed away. So I hope she would be, you know, but I don't know. I am not able to talk to her about it. And they're like, oh, I'm saying, you know, it kind of brings the whole thing down, which is like what I didn't want to do. But I'm like, well, what am I going to say? Like, yeah, she's like, really, like, what the fuck? What am I going to do? So, but yeah, there's that assumption that like, oh, you must have both parents because like, you're like, you know, young enough.
Right.
And so, yeah. So then again, it makes you feel like you're this outsider, outcast, like, what's wrong with me? You know, like, everyone just looks at me and assumes this, but like, actually, you know, I'm dealing with that. There's like shame associated with it, you know, and guilt and awkwardness. And it's just, it's all the things that you never think you're going to have to deal with. at that age, but you do. Curious question for you. I did not, probably should have and still should, but see like a therapist and talk to someone about it. Did you ever?
Good question. I did not at the time of my dad's death. I did not see anyone for 6 years. And then several years ago now, when my mom was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer, it just changed my perspective on talking to someone, and grief was readdressed. Her specific cancer is treatable but not curable, so she'll have it the rest of her life. And when it was a few years ago, it was devastating because, you know, with the diagnosis like that, it was like maybe 6 months.
Yeah, stage 4 is like the last thing you want to hear. Yeah, of course.
But
cancer in general, yeah.
We're here 4 years later, and so now it's like the new normal of now I'm used to it, and now I'm like good again. But I've on and off for years. I'm talking to someone now, and just because it's good to have that relationship if something is to happen to her. But it was interesting. The wound was reopened with another diagnosis, which is, you know, everyone has a different situation. Is it something that you would ever do at some point, having like someone to talk to about your grief? It sounds like you're doing well, but I'm curious your perspective.
I don't know. I think I'm afraid of going and what it would open up or unlock. You know, that's the truth. I think I'd actually enjoy it. I mean, even like this is like, you know, part therapy right now. It's just talking about it and having someone listen to your shit, you know, like genuinely, I think is nice. And I guess I haven't done it because I'm like, man, there's like 20 years to unpack. And like, I'm feeling pretty good right now. So like, let's just kind of like keep what's under the rug and like keep on chugging forward. But then there's like the like, wow, like I wonder what would be like unleashed if I like dealt with all that and like who I would be. But I don't know, maybe I'm just not ready or I haven't taken that step yet. But it's something I think is really awesome. And I, you know, people that do it speak highly of it, and I admire it, and I probably should, and I probably will, but I haven't. Am I allowed to ask you a question, or is this all about me?
No, I mean, you can. I want it to be about you for your sake, but sure.
It'll be me. No, but how, I'm just curious now. Like for like, when you talk about the humor of death, like, you know, we joke about that all the time with my dad. Like, to, you know, to this day, he'll say things like, "Remember these things when I'm gone. You'll remember these." You know, it's like there's like this inherent like, he's going to die. We know that, and like that's really going to be devastating because then we're gonna have me and my brother will have, you know, no parents, and so it's always like this, like, is this the last time I'm gonna see him? Is this the last time I'm gonna hug him? Is this the last time I'm gonna say I love you? And like to this day, we make it a point now that like we always end phone calls with like, "I love you," because it's like we want that to be like the last thing we said in case anything happens, and like we know how true that can be. So I'm curious like how that is with you and your mom, of like now that you've both been through that and now she's got stage 4, is it something where it's like off limits, or like you guys like just talk about it and like, "Well, this is crazy, like now you too, like is it like a weird thing, you know, or like does she deal with it differently than you, and like this is why you're dealing with it the way you are because she doesn't?" Like, I'm fascinated by all that,
all the things. You're so insightful to ask, so I really appreciate it though. No, thank you, it's like nice of you to ask. Yeah, no, like my family was super, I have a younger sister and who's in law school.
How much younger?
She's 2 years younger. She's in Columbia Law School on Zoom, which I'm like, what does that even mean?
Like, it means, I know. Well, my brother is 6 years younger than me, but like, yeah, there's like friends that go to NYU, but they, instead of putting their rent into a New York apartment, they all just like got a house in Hawaii and they're attending NYU, but like in Hawaii. And I was like, what is going, like, are there going to be campuses anymore? Like, what even is going to college? Like, you can just be anywhere. But anyway, sorry, back to you.
Anyways, it's so interesting. But, you know, my family was like super quiet about all of it, and so quiet to the point of it literally exploded out of me. And then when I started doing stand-up, like my sets are actually like, I just heavily address death, and like I make tons of jokes about it, and specifically instigated by my mom's diagnosis of like, also my dad's diagnosis, like he had ALS from when I was 4 to 19, so it was like always on our minds. He was always sick, he was paralyzed, he was this, I called, you know, just, it was, and my mom had breast cancer then too. So without going, that's a whole other podcast, but like when she was diagnosed again and they're like, "You'll have this forever," and my dad had his thing forever, I was like, something inside of me is just called to do something, and here came the podcast stand-up, because I was like, I'm just weirdly surrounded by these diagnoses. It's been a learning curve for me, like wanting to be more inclusive to people who've lost people from suicide, homicide, accidents, other things. So like, that's, you know, newer for me. But no, my mom was very closed off, and over the years has seen my openness. And at first she was like, oh my God, what the hell are you doing? And now it's like, you know, she's not like a comedian. She doesn't want to be like open like me, but like she was on the podcast. The fact that she even like talked about it at all. And like, I threw in a BuzzFeed video where she's like, this is so awkward. She didn't post it, but like she was in it opening the can of worms. And now she can like make some jokes. She'll be like, oh yeah, well like just use my, you know, use my shoes, or like buy this with my card, because my money's your money, because I'll die in a few years. And I'm like, this
yeah, my dad says the same thing.
Does he really?
Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah.
It's not funny, but it's funny, right?
Well, because it's like, we've been there. Like, we're all on the same page, and we get it. And, but it's also like, yeah, they're a different generation. So I feel like there is more of like a, like, you know, the closed off nature is the natural nature, and people like just announcing their whole lives on social media for thousands of strangers is like so bizarre. Right. But also interesting to you that you had that, you know, your dad was going through that since you were four, which is like, so you've always, I feel like my outcast, like, oh, I'm different than everyone thing that hit when I was 17. I wonder, like, that's like, that seems like you probably grew up with that your whole life, and people come over or like they see your dad, or it's like, yeah, so that's definitely informed. I totally get now, you know, why you're doing the podcast, and yeah, why it means so much. Cause yeah, it's like your whole upbringing has been like, I'm sure different than most with healthy parents.
So I know we're popping back and forth between like career and grief, and these are my two favorite topics. So for anyone who doesn't know, if you don't mind speaking to your favorite onset experience, and also would love to hear about what's coming up for you, the new film you were a part of. It's 2020. You don't know what's next, but like, we want to hear what your goals are. Summarize the Max Adler tip.
Max Adler tip. Well, Glee was the big thing. That was the big break that got me out of the restaurant game. Glee was huge because I did show choir in high school, and I also loved Nip Tuck, which is Ryan Murphy's show. And so when I found out Ryan Murphy was doing a show about high school show choir, I flipped out and was just like, oh my gosh, I need to be on that. I tried to go in for, you know, one of their series regulars. They wouldn't see me because I didn't have any credits. And ended up getting in as, you know, a bully who throws a slushie, and it was like two lines, one day of work. And I was like, fine, I'll take it. And then I don't know what happened, but it just,
that's all it was at first.
Oh yeah. It was a co-star. It was like, it was just a two line. Well, it was like, you know, it was like a monologue, cause I slushied, Corey Monteith, rest in peace. Great guy who like welcomed me onto that set and like would just open his arms and was such a leader on and off set and was awesome. And, I miss that guy a lot. So, but he, but I had like a monologue where like I slushy him and Diana Agron. And so, but I was with the acting coach mentor who I mentioned earlier, like we coached on it for 2 hours because I wanted it so bad. And I was like, listen, like what can I bring into this monologue that nobody else will? Like, let's really understand like the subtext and where this guy, like, why is he bullying? Like, where is this coming from? And we like dug in. And then when I went into the audition, they told me like in the room, oh yeah. And that's a whole other story, because that was like, when I first moved here, I like one of my things was like, I looked up like IMDb and was like, what shows do I like? What movies do I like? Who casts them? And like, I want to be on their radar. And I would just like go drop off headshots, like, you know, on all like little drop off bins, like at their doors. And UDK casting, Robert Ulrich, who you obviously know, was one of the big ones because of Nip Tuck. And I was like, man, like, I hope one day like they have an audition and like I can go in there and impress them. And I went in there, and there was like people I knew, like guys from like O-Town were like auditioning before me. I remember like it was like Ashley Angel, or like it was just people. I was like, oh my God, like I saw that guy in like a Disney movie when I was seven, like what the hell. But I went in there and did my thing, and Robert in the room was just like, I think you're the guy for this. And I was like, what? Like, no one's ever told me that in the room. And yeah, he was, you know, with Alex, his amazing assistant at the time.
I was their intern in 2010, so I love them.
Oh, so like a year later. Yeah, I love them so much. As people, we're still friends. We still text and hang out. And then they gave me that, you know, big job. So that was how that happened. And then it was just a one-day thing. Thank you so much. And then, yeah, Ryan, you know, Ryan's on set. And I was just like, oh, my God, sir. Like, Nip Tuck is, like, crazy. This is nuts. And made a fool of myself. But it became another episode, then another episode, and then 6 years. And it began. I was never a regular. I never had a contract. They never even talked to me about anything that was just like a script would like show up and I would find out I'm booked for another episode. And I was like, whoa, this is like a big storyline. And I would like come in and there's just like business as usual. Like, hey, Max. I was like, hey, like you wrote this like really impactful storyline for me. Like, do you want to talk about it? They're like, no, just break a leg, have fun. And I was like, okay, like shit. I hope they trust me. Anyway, so Glee, that was the big one. I won't say any names. There was a producer there who like was always kind of just cold to me. Like I always felt like I needed to like prove myself to him. And that was a big moment on set because there was the episode where I kissed Chris Colfer in the locker room. Where you find out Karofsky's closeted, and that producer was at the rehearsal watching, and we did it, and he came up to me and he was just like, this is going to be a magical scene, great job, and like shook my hand, and I was like, whoa, like okay, like got the approval of like the king, you know. So that was a big moment. So that was really, yeah, that was huge. And then Switched at Birth was the thing after that, which again was like, I think a couple episodes, just like recur for like two or three episodes, it became three seasons. They liked the chemistry with Vanessa Morano, who's an amazing actress, and just what I brought to the set, and that became 3 years. And so that was, it's always been like this weird like backdoor, you know, kind of like approach to getting roles. Like I've never like booked a huge gig on just like an audition. It's always been this weird like I get something and then it just kind of like domino effects. So that's crazy. Then there was a Woody Allen movie that I booked and did called Cafe Society, but it was weird because I booked it and shot it and it was with Bruce Willis. So my scenes was all with Bruce and Woody. And then like days later, Bruce was like let go from the project because of a Broadway scheduling conflict and replaced with Steve Carell. And I was just like, huh, that's interesting. And then when they wanted me to reshoot with Steve Carell, in between that time, I had booked Sully with Clint Eastwood. And so I was gonna be in New York filming with Clint Eastwood doing Sully the day that like Woody needed me in LA with Steve Carell. And so I literally had to drop out of a Woody Allen project because I was like, sorry, I'm working with Clint in New York. And that was—
oh my God.
Like devastating, but also like kind of cool. But also like my dad, you know, was like the first one that was like, you're unemployed 300 days a year. Like the one day, you know, they need you on the same day. And I was like, I know, Dad, like this is crazy. Like, what am I gonna do? So I got to work with Woody, but you know, never made it to camera because it was a different actor. But then yeah, Clint Eastwood and Tom Hanks, like those were great moments because we would like hang out in like the first class section of like the plane we were shooting on. And it was just like, I was just sitting there and like, we're just talking shop and talking politics and talking about, you know, movies and horses and Westerns. And I was like, you're just sitting there with like these legends, just talking to them about real life stuff. And just every second is surreal. So that was nuts. And then the most recent thing, which, yeah, so coming out October 16th on Netflix is Aaron Sorkin wrote and directed The Trial of the Chicago Seven, which is based on these true events of protesters and police getting into it, clashing in 1968 over the Vietnam War, which could not be more relevant and topical now. And that was nuts because we shot in Chicago, like on the streets and at the park where it actually happened 50 years ago. And it's, you know, Eddie Redmayne, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Frank Langella, Michael Keaton, like the list goes on, and Mark Rylance, like there's so many great actors. And we're there, you know, with hundreds of background in, you know, the period piece clothing and period piece cop cars. And just, you felt like you were in 1968 and like the whole city felt like a period piece and just one of those, like, how am I here right now moments. And so, yeah, those have been some pretty cool. So, yeah. So all the moments like this morning where I'm auditioning for like two pages on some show and I'm like, what the hell? You know, there are those moments that cancel it out, but those are few and far between, I'll say. But when it happens, I really appreciate it. And it's very, very, like, it's so sweet, you know, because there's all the other shit moments when you're like, I am just going to, like, everyone's like, want to go back to your trailer? And I'm like, nope, I'm going to sit right here and just, like, watch everything and take it all in because, like, I probably won't be back for, like, 4 months, you know? So, yeah, those are the big moments that I can remember.
Oh, congratulations, Max. I'm like beaming this entire time because it's just, It's just so cool when people that are as nice and like kind and charismatic as you get to live their dreams. And, you know, you weren't like born in X, Y, or Z, like you made this happen. And I'm just so, so excited to hear about it right now. And congratulations. I hope you're really proud of yourself, because that's a really, really big deal. And that's really, really amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. And, you know, the full circle closing moment would just be like, you know, I hope it makes mom proud. You know, it's that feeling of like all those moments. Like, and I think about her when I'm on set. I'm like, all right, mom, you know, let's go do this. So, yeah.
Do you just love your life sometimes? Like, are you just so proud of yourself? I just feel like that just must be so just cool, you know, as someone like who hasn't done all of those things, you know, a couple things, but not all of them. Do you just feel like so excited? I would just wake up and be like, oh my God.
And I mean, yeah, I guess the only thing I could say is just that, like, if it happened to me, then it's possible for anyone. Cause like, yeah, it is just, I'm just some dude from Arizona who like moved out here and like didn't know what the hell he was doing and been fired. And, you know, so it's all those moments, like all the grief and, you know, shit leading up to it. I guess that I can just say, you know, it's obviously possible for anyone, and it's just hard work and timing and luck and opportunity and all that. But, it has happened, you know, to me several times, and I'm very, very, fortunate and grateful and appreciative, and, it's not lost on me for a second.
Oh, I love that. Thank you, Max, for sharing all of this. And last question for you, do you have a book, film, or podcast that inspired you in some way relating to your grief or relating to your career?
Wow. Well, book, Catcher in the Rye. I love it. And I feel like I can read that every few years. Movie, weirdly enough, The Firm, which is like a Tom Cruise film from back in the day, because I remember that was like the first movie I remember seeing in the theater with my dad. I'm thinking like, man, I want to do that. Like, I think I want to be an actor. And what was the book, movie, and what else? Oh, podcast. There's a great, in addition to yours, in addition to Dying of Laughter,
thanks,
there's one that I listened to called Off Camera with Sam Jones.
Yes.
And I love that. He gets really into it with actors that I really love and admire, you know, all the A-listers who have had success, and kind of talks like this, you know, their upbringing and their story and, you know, grief and tragedy and what's led them to where they're at now. And I always find kind of, you know, solace and community in that podcast as well. So there you go.
Love the Rex. Love it all. How do you handle the heartbreak of the biz? And this is just like a personal question, or like as someone who's been through tragedy in your real life, curious if you've had tools or things to help you through heartbreak of like getting really close to stuff. Like, I've tested for a few things, and yet since I have a hard time. There's things from years ago that I still wish I got. And how do you handle the heartbreak of getting close to roles?
I mean, to be honest with you, I've actually never even tested in my life. I've never been a series regular. It's always been this weird, like, oh, like he got on as a guest star and like, oh, okay, like he's good. Let's write more for him. But like, I guess I'm just not a great auditioner. Like, I'm still, you know, like auditioning for stuff these days and like not booking, and like it still crushes me. So I'm with you to this day. But I think it's a really, honestly, full circle goes back to my mom. Because there's that thought of like, I understand true loss and true heartbreak. And like you said earlier, you know, like it could be worse. So it's like when I don't get that audition or that job, like it sucks, but it's like, I'm alive, I'm breathing, I don't have a disease, you know, right, that I know of, you know. And I think it's that, it's like, no matter what people say about it, you know, me or my work, or if I don't get a job, it's like, well, but my heart's beating, there'll be another day, and like, we'll figure it out. And like, it's really not the end of the world, because like, I've experienced what I thought the end of the world would be. And I've came out of that. And I've lived to see, you know, future days beyond that. So like, if that didn't break me, then like, not getting that gig on the CW sure won't, you know, that kind of a thing. Granted, it's hard. Like, it's just tough, because you just want to win, and you want someone that tells you like, hey, like, you're talented, and validate that dream. And it's something I still, you know, still have to deal with to this day. And in a really kind of like a different way, you know, because now there's like, either fans or friends or people that, like, you know, think I'm like some millionaire living in the hills, and like definitely not near that. And you know, they're like, oh, but you, like, you're in, like, you work all the time. And I'm like, no, like, Sorkin was like last October, and like I did like a day on The Rookie, and like I haven't worked this whole year, and like I got a family, like, so there's still that stress too of like, there's like the assumption the world kind of puts on you, and then the reality, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, Google my net worth. It is, you know, a lot more than what I've got in the account. There's still things I struggle with and deal with, but I mean, I think it's that. I think it's like, you know, at the end of the day, there's like shelter over my head, there's food, there's health, there's family. And so I think there's like the knowing that there's tomorrow and there's another job that is more right for me, or that I just don't know about yet. And like every day there's a new opportunity and something comes up that I had no idea was going to happen yesterday. Like even going back to this audition today, it was like Friday night at like 7:30. I think my wife and I were watching Ratchet on Netflix, and it was like at 8:30 I got this audition, and I was like, man, like I just like checked out for the weekend, and I was like so excited just to like chill.
Yeah.
Like boom, like back to work. So it's like every day, every night, every hour, like anything is possible, anything can happen. And so I think that's what kind of like keeps me going, is like, is the excitement of the unknown, of like, well, like tomorrow is promised to nobody, life and death wise, but also career wise. So I think there's that of like, there's the hope kind of outweighs the devastation.
I love that. Thank you for that. You have such a positive attitude and like outlook on life. Like you're just such a lovely person to talk with. Like I feel very energized with this conversation. So thanks for sharing the vulnerabilities, the excitement. Like I'm here for it, Max. I feel
really great. I'm so glad. Thank you. Yeah. And feeling so mutual. I'm glad you're doing this. I think it's going to help a lot of people, reach a lot of people, help a lot of people get through everything they're going through. So thank you, and good luck to you and your mom and your sister and family and boyfriend and everything, and in life and love and career and all that jazz.
I mean, look at that wrap up. I couldn't have done it better myself. Where can people find you on social media, though, before I let you go?
Mr._Max_Adler, Twitter and Instagram, which I'll have to talk to you about how to share this or how to let people know or when.
Totally. Yay. That's so appreciated. Thank you. Check. I mean, I feel like a lot of people – I mean, they know who you are, but now I hope they can learn more about your personal story, and I hope that's helpful to them. So thank you.
I hope so. That's the reason for doing this, is I really hope that this podcast and our conversation can help, even if it just helps one other person, especially if, you know, not hurting themselves, then mission accomplished. We've done good.
Thanks, Max.